Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
How fragile the thing is.
It's written on flash paper, Scott.
You know, I mean, what did Bush say? It's a piece of paper. Right? What does that tell you? We better be real, real careful. It matters.
Matters a bunch. Scott, thank you very much.
Hey, you too, Bob.
Always good to hear from you. Give my best to Linda, please.
We'll do that.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye now. I'm all better. I am out of the tree now. Thank you, Scott. Yeah. Tell me where, again, sorry, not just trying to be a horse's rear end. Tell me where else that conversation happens. Hint, it doesn't anywhere but the horn. And we'll try one last caller before we head on into the sunset. Hi, who have I got?
You got Pat.
Hey, Pat.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, well, I know I'm calling right at the end of the show, and
that's
I wanted to put my two cents in as far as how my week without Bob went last week, and it was tough. And I really think people need to know and need to hear it. We got to pay for this, guys. And I made it through last week, but
yeah. Now bear in mind, I was not on strike. I was not on strike. Trust me, I wanted to be here.
And I have some good news. I have been hired on by the place I've been temping for.
Oh, yay.
So, yeah, I have a real job, and I have insurance now that's reasonable, and I'll be able to up my contribution a bit.
Oh, bless your heart.
It
just, you know, and again, I reiterate the fact that I hate talking about this stuff. Someday, somewhere out there is the person who's going to make it possible for me not to. But until that day dawns, folks like you and all the others who make this continue to happen are, well, you know, you're a very thin line standing between what we do here to the best of our abilities and silence.
And the silence wasn't fun. also, I wanted to say, I had to just, you know, because I just got hired on at this place, I don't feel comfortable expressing my political views, and I had to listen today to somebody who must have got it through their email about Barack's mistake back at the beginning of May where he said 57 states, and I had to listen to that conversation and just, you know, clamp down on my tongue and I don't know how we can defeat that. If these people, and these are all young people too, these are, you know, I don't understand. I just don't get it.
I don't either, and you know, I don't want to go, you know, I'm a nice guy. I don't go out, you know, screaming and raving and ranting, and you know, I save that for our, you know, our time together. But I can't stay silent. And for those, you know, you mentioned it, you know, our buddy Vince mentioned it last night. It's like a form of tyranny, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, you, especially, you know, in the position I'm in, I can't just think about myself. I have to think about my wife and boys.
Right.
And so if I lose this job, it's it's a big deal, you know.
Well, so, yeah, you know, I looked at Agnes earlier today, and you know, sometimes we talk about this stuff, Pat, and she doesn't like talking about it, and I don't like talking about it. And I said, look, you know, if it all comes down, I'm reasonably intelligent, and I'll find something, and I'll go get me a boss. And and she
you got a boss. His name is Wayne.
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, I got the best of bosses. I did, you know, I got you guys for a boss, but I'm talking about, you know, some little martinet who, you know, that I don't have any respect for. You know, the guy who gets what, the yellow vest instead of the blue vest at Walmart or something. And it just fills me with dread and makes my spleen hurt or something. But we do. We talk about that stuff, Pat. And I understand because, it's tough. It's tough here. I'm not gonna play games with anybody. We got a house full of kids here, and you know I'd like to have the girls in ballet and get the boy personal pitching lessons and stuff, but that's not the world we live in.
Yep.
Maybe it will be someday, but it's not right now.
Certainly isn't. There are fewer and fewer of us living in that world. So.
Yeah, exactly. You getting all right? Getting along okay? Otherwise, how are the boys?
They're good. They're asleep. And
blessedly so.
Yeah, and
yeah.
The wife is off since we're going to be trying to move closer to where I work. She's off making photocopies of stuff that we need. We're trying to see if it's going to be cheaper to actually try to buy a place than to rent. And so we got.
Oh God, I hate all of that stuff. I always remember what my one good buddy said once upon a time. He said the. One move every 5 years equals a house fire.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of the stuff that gets put in the wrong box and where the hell did that go and you know, yeah. And
the stuff that you just have to throw out because you can't move it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a house fire. You know, without the light show, I guess. Well, Patrick, I do have to roll on and get Peter's rerun going. But it's awfully good to hear from you, and I'm glad things are turning around. You'd be surprised, you and everyone else, how much time Agnes and I spend talking about you guys.
Yeah.
Your family.
Yeah, we are. And we got to do what we can to keep this thing going. Everybody listen up. We got to keep it going.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
And you're welcome, Bob.
Give our best to your lovely wife and give the boys a kiss.
I will.
All right.
Take it easy, Bob.
You too, Pat. Bye now.
Night.
Said far more eloquently than I could ever do. It's been a hell of a night. You guys, as always, prove inspiring. And so, Peter Godbold, he's done with being in computer hell, for those of you who are keeping score at home. But today, it was a matter of Peter's two dented rusty tomato cans and a string internet connection going south. So with any luck at all, we will get completely back to normal come Monday. Come Monday, as the song goes. But thank you all. Thank you all so very, very much. And I suppose I'll be back tomorrow evening. I've given some thought to taking a long weekend, but I don't know. I'll probably be here tomorrow evening. Yeah, yeah. Having had an enforced downtime last week, I don't like it when I'm not here and you guys aren't there. So many thanks again to all of you. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, who makes all the streams do what the streams do, and the archives, and the podcasts at whiterosesociety.org. If you value the horn, you may not even fully understand how much you value the hard work of Ben Birch. Thanks to our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, partial sponsors of all of the programming here on the Horn, crmw.net. What we talk about with mountaintop removal in this program is deadly in earnest, and you can be part of the solution by joining Coal River Mountain Watch. It won't even hurt. And you know, there's no initiation. You don't have to ride a goat or anything, okay? The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch are my heroes. They are my inspiration. And they are the hardest working, bravest people I know. and always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome, welcome indeed to book, chapter, and verse 127 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. You'll find Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. CRMW.net for Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by and have a look at what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Wednesday, March 19, 2008. And if you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Wednesday evening, that is March the 19th, you are listening to a live show, and you're indeed welcome to call in and participate with myself and the two guests that I'll be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests, their previous shows. The audio archives are there. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. I always like to point out the chat room is very much a part of the Head On Radio Network. It is active during all of the live programming that you hear on this network, and you'll find some of the smartest and most entertaining people on the whole planet in the Strictly Confidential or Head On Radio Network chat room. You'll find links to the chat room at strictlyconfidentialradio.com or over at headonradionetwork.com. Speaking of headonradionetwork.com, you'll find links there to the PayPal button. That should be right there on the home page. As I say, we are listener-supported, and your contributions are not only needed, they are appreciated. These funds that you contribute go to the physical facility, as in keeping the hard drive spinning and the packets passing and the cassettes cassetting and the VUs VUing and the microphones listening and all of the things that have to happen in a studio in order to produce a program like this or any of the other programs on the Head On Radio Network. Also at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you'll find links to the main site, and there are links there to the Head On Radio Network schedule, and you can find out about all the other progressive programming on this network, of which I am only a very, very small part. You'll also find links to Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Wow, it's nice to be back. I have spent a couple of days nursing along in mail server that, well, the best I can put it to you, it was the mail server crisis from hell. You know, I had to laugh while I was doing it, though. It became amusing to me at some point of all the lost emails that the Bush administration has deliberately lost by not implementing a standard backup routine. Apparently there's no care or concern. In fact, they're violating laws of archiving presidential records, but nonetheless, they have carefully and explicitly lost thousands upon thousands upon thousands, if not millions, of emails, specifically relating to the Valerie Plame incident, where a CIA agent was outed by the Bush administration. I had to laugh to myself that a small business like the one I had been working with to restore their database, it was all pretty much cut and dried. You know, there are the backups from the night before, and the entire mail database is sitting there waiting to be restored. It's just the level of incompetence, or outright deceit that the Bush administration exhibits never ceases to amaze me, and that even a small company in little old Tallahassee, Florida, has implemented a successful backup program for all of the company emails just made me laugh and grin. But it's good to be back with you folks. I have missed you, and that is true. You have become a part of my life, and you are always very much valued people. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4 head-on. And that translates into 877-443-2366. And again, that's 877, the number 4 head-on, or 877-443-2366. Those are toll-free lines. And we are happy to pay the postage on your incoming call. If you do have unlimited long distance, many cell phone services do, or if you have a bunch of extra minutes racked up, by all means use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. As I say, we are listener-supported. That telephone number, our toll line, is area code 304-658-3333. Again, that is 304-658-3333. And that rings in good old West Virginia. Either Bob or Agnes will take the call. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's a long one. And I do try to check the emails during the break. So you have three ways of participating. You can phone us, or you can log into the chat room. I try to keep an eye on that as the show progresses. And you can also email us at Peter at headonradionetwork.com. I had mentioned a few moments ago that we have not just one guest this evening, we actually have two. And in fact, this guest is a return guest. Bonnie Kay was with us just last month, and that was on March the 19th, by the way. If you'd like to hear the previous show with Bonnie, you should simply go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the February calendar. She was with us in February. Click on the 27th in the February calendar, and you'll go right to the audio archive. We have her joining us again this evening. Normally, I don't bring a guest back as quickly as I'm bringing back Bonnie Kay. We have guests appear more than once often on this show. We have such wonderful guests, and normally I don't schedule them just back to back, you know, one month and the next month. But I have to tell you, I'm making an exception in this case because there was a large number of emails that arrived regarding this particular show that Bonnie participated in on the 27th. And that particular show was Bonnie appeared with a fellow named Dennis. Now, I should tell you, in case you you missed the interview, just who Bonnie is, I'm taking some of this information from her site. And Bonnie has been counseling women who discover that their husbands are gay and, in fact, leading a double life since about 1985. And she began doing that following the collapse of her own marriage to a gay man. Bonnie tells us that in this country, it's estimated over 4 million people are married or have been married to gay men, and in almost all cases, unknowingly. Bonnie tells us that through the years, she's worked with over 30,000 women who've had to come to terms with this devastating news. Bonnie's goal is to help people understand how it happens and how to cope with your life and how to move forward. After a woman confirms that her husband is gay or bisexual. Her website, by the way, and we are posting this in chat. For those of you who are not in chat, you can find information about Bonnie at gayhusbands.com. That's an easy link, gayhusbands.com. There you'll find information on the free literature, free information she'll send to you, counseling for straight wives, counseling for gay men who are ready to come out to their wives, and also private counseling for straight wives or couples by phone or by email. This is an area that Bonnie is recognized throughout the media as being an expert on. There's a long list of radio and television programs she's been associated with and come on as an expert or as a counselor regarding this type of I'm at a loss for words. Not a good thing, no matter how you look at it. In any case, in February, Bonnie was on with Dennis. Now, Dennis is a gay man, and he was the other man in a situation where a woman was, in fact, married to a gay man, and this gay man was having an outside affair with Dennis. So Dennis was the other man in this this relationship. Tonight, Bonnie joins us with Steve. Steve is a former married man. Steve is a gay man who was married to a straight woman, and Bonnie has helped both him and his wife move through that. So we'll be hearing it from a different point of view this time. And again, I'm bringing Bonnie back so quickly because of the number of emails I received that people were truly interested and truly touched. And in fact, I at this point, I have no doubt of Bonnie's statistics that approximately 4 million people that have women who are married to or have been married to gay men. Not that I received 4 million emails, but I received a significant number. And so that having been said, Bonnie, welcome to Strictly Confidential again. Bonnie, do I have you?
Hello?
Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me back.
I'm thrilled to have you back, Bonnie. It was indeed an interesting conversation we had when you were here with Dennis. In fact, we covered so much area and so many of the... I've got to tell you, I walked away from that show shaking my head at all the things I did not know. What an amazing appearance that was. How is Dennis, by the way?
Dennis is doing great, and once again, enjoyed the show immensely, and he had a different perspective of the other man, which I felt is really important. People don't hear about the other man very rarely. But the reason I wanted to come back tonight is because I wanted to bring my friend Steve with me. And are you there, Steve?
The studio is, I believe, bringing Steve on the line. Steve, are you with us at this point?
Yes, hi. Nice to be here, Peter.
Okay, Steve,
welcome to the show, Steve. Yes, Steve, can you hear Bonnie okay?
Yes, I can.
Hi,
excellent.
Steve.
By the way, Steve, just quickly, that was me with the second call today. I called you to confirm some things, and then I hit my redial. I thought I was redialing another long-distance number, and it wasn't until after you answered that that was me calling the second time.
Okay, that's great. But the reason I wanted to bring Steve with us, Peter, is because Steve's done some columns for me in my newsletter that comes out every month. I have a free monthly newsletter. And a lot of times women who are straight women don't know who to ask the questions that come up that are so pressing about understanding their gay husband. And Steve has been a wonderful resource as far as answering some of those questions. So I thought tonight would be a great time that we could have some of our people from my support network, you know, call in if they had any questions to ask Steve. Steve was gracious enough to come to my get-together this past September, where a number of women had a chance to meet him in person. And there are still a lot of other women who read his columns when he's in my newsletter, and they really enjoy what he has to say. He's very upfront and honest, doesn't hold back anything.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, that's great to hear from Bonnie. Obviously, you are not being cast as the villain. If you're being cast as the villain, nobody would want to talk to you. They would just they would be putting you aside, saying nobody wants to hear from him. So you are indeed bringing an interesting perspective to this. Steve, when did you meet? How did you happen to meet Bonnie and become involved with this? What happened?
Well, I'm one of the gay men in society who can blend. So I prefer to get married, have kids. I could perform with a woman, so I basically decided I didn't want to deal with the ridicule. I must be okay. And I could pass. And there are millions of guys just like me. And my life went that way. And finally, my wife, I told her the truth. And, you know, her response is similar to a lot of women that I talk to. She said to me, if it was another woman, I would know how to fight back. I don't know how to deal with this. And, I, you know, when I hear you talk about villains, I've learned over time that it's not really about who's the villain. It's about the healing process moving forward.
That's well said, Steve. I have to admit that were a man that I'm close to, being a gay man, were a man that I was close to, seeing a woman, I would have no idea how to handle it. That, you know, obviously everyone has probably faced situations regarding fidelity, but a woman would be very, very difficult for me to wrap my head around, to put it one way. How long were you married, Steve?
5 years. I have 2 children. We do not communicate. I hope someday it changes. And listening again to these women and what happens sometimes when their marriage ends, rarely is there an open, honest communication with, and they're still friends, because there's a feeling of deceit. And there's this feeling that the man knew all along, and you know, you should have known better. And you know, Bonnie and I agree to disagree sometimes. And from my perspective, being a man, the same way when my wife would ask me, what do I think about abortion? I would tell her, well, I don't think I'd ever need one. All I can look at is, from a man's point of view, what I know to be true for me and for most guys. And again, there are no absolutes, but it's no one walks into this knowing, like, I'm going to buy a plaid shirt. I know what I'm doing. There are a lot of self-talk going on in your head that you turn off and on. And the strange part is that when you can perform with a woman, you start telling yourself, well, I must be okay. And, you know, if I had the choice, I would probably want to be straight, just because of, just to get off the subject, when I met with Bonnie's women, I had a great time. But the biggest response I got was the shock, and the one woman said, you know, now I'll never know, because I look totally straight and you would never know. And I guess they had thought that through the process, now they could identify in the future these men, and they wouldn't get into the same type of relationship again. When they met me, they found that that's not true, that it's not just what you see. So there's a little...
Well, it's not necessarily what you see, Steve, but it's certainly what you get. So even if they couldn't tell when they saw you, if they try to have any kind of romantic relationship with you at this point, it would be a telltale sign.
Well, that's true, because at this point in my life, I'm honest with myself, and I've come to terms. But looking back, I think, as a man, when you learn about your sexuality, it's not just about, you know, stimulating yourself or having someone stimulate you. To me, it's like learning Chinese. You know, you learn all the bad words first, and you have fun, and then you learn to communicate. That I don't think you really learn about your own personal sexuality at 20 years old. And that's where a lot of mistakes are made. And then it comes to the point, well, I don't want to hurt my wife. I don't want to hurt my kids. When you do realize you're so far into it, sometimes, and again, there are no absolutes, but, you know, I know a lot of men who are married that have sex with other men. And, you know, I would challenge anyone to go on a website like Craigslist and post an ad and say, you know, put a, you know, I'm 22 years old, college kid, and I really like married dudes. And in an hour and a half, you would have more emails than you would ever be able to handle. And to me, that's the other half of gay society that really, you know, no one knows exists. Because they blend.
Well, Steve, did you come to the realization that you were in fact a gay man after you were married, or you have mentioned that you were able to perform, but was there an understanding in your mind that you might be gay, or did you think it was just something that was insignificant? I'm trying to understand how it happened.
So I think it, you know, I got married at 20. I married, my wife was 18. When I was 16 years old, there were these self-talk, these things that go through your head, but if it's not what you want to hear, you quench it real fast and move on. Now, you know, there was that questioning of myself. But my wife was the first woman that I was ever with, and I was so happy because I could perform like a rabbit. And so all the self-talk and all the questions about myself must be wrong, because society tells me, you know, when I see the parades on TV and, you know, gay society and what I see society projecting when I look in the mirror, that's not me. And now, sexually, I can perform, so it must not be me. And so you're just overwhelmed with this sense of relief. Like, thank God. I thought I would have to, you know, I thought I would have to buy a dress and start talking funny. So that, I think there's just, if not bigger, you know, just as big a population of gay men blending in with straight society as society sees in the gay bars or on the parades or, you know, on the news. I just think that they, you know, they can get by.
And I think a large part of it is that these men are hoping that the women will be able to fix them, Peter. That
yes.
by getting married, it's
yes.
going to take away all of those nagging feelings, and that's going to turn them into being straight.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really counting on us, and their families are
yes.
counting on us, because their families know also. And even if, you know, they can't exactly come out with the word gay, they know that there's nagging feelings, there's attraction, and they're hoping if they love us enough that we're going to be able to fix them, and we temporarily do, because when you're in your 20s, I'm sure Steve will attest to this, any kind of sex will feel good, and you have that emotional bond with the woman, and you want it so badly that you're able to, you know, keep up the pretense for a while. But by the time you hit 30, you know, you start sliding downhill as far as being able to feel excited about the woman you're with.
Exactly. And I think what also makes it worse is society came out with a word called bisexual. So that is like...
I'm sorry, what word did you say, Steve?
Bisexual.
Oh,
you know,
what is that?
Society says that, you know, you can be bisexual. To me, bisexual is a gay man trying to live with a woman who occasionally has feelings for a guy, and he wants to explain it to himself so that he could deal with it, so he can say to himself, well, I'm not gay, I'm just bisexual. Well, you know, the reality is, you know, I've learned that dogs, you know, the animalistic sexual behavior, like you know that in your early 20s, you could do a warm donut. I know I could do a warm donut. And you get older, and the emotional connection means more than the physical attraction. And you learn that bisexual doesn't mean anything because you can't be emotionally attracted to a man and a woman. You perform physically, but when you get to a certain age, you realize that there's a psychological need that you have to have met. But for the early 20s crowd or the teenagers, the word bisexual, you know, the word bisexual allows them to blend in and have an excuse because society says, well, that, you know, this is a word and you don't have to be gay. So, and again, there are no absolutes. And I'm, you know, I'm not, I've been with a lot of men and my preference is guys that blend. So guys that look straight or blend.
Yes.
And we have
Steve, that you have mentioned that at the beginning you were able to do it like a bunny, and you've mentioned emotional connections too. This is a very interesting area because it brings up the emotional aspect of sexuality, which oftentimes we never deal with. Steve, when was it that in your marriage that you began to realize that the emotional connection wasn't going to be there or wasn't going to work? That being a component of sexuality, I assume that the sex faded out too when you began to realize that you were the emotional connection wasn't right.
Mm-hmm. When it was just I'm playing tennis, I get done. A guy walks up to me who I thought was attractive and made a pass. And everything came back like a tidal wave. And I remember the first conversation after we had sex. And it was the first time I had sex with a man because I was married. And he looked at me and he said, "Are you happy?" And I looked at him and I said, "No." I think it was the most honest thing I ever said to myself. And, you know, I love my wife because she made me feel straight. But that's not the same love when you're with someone and you're compatible sexually and emotionally that you feel. She took a big weight off my shoulders. She helped me blend in.
Steve, did you have sex before you were married with a man?
Yes.
So you knew what it was to have sex with a man before you got married, correct?
That's correct, yes. But, you know, again, society says for teenagers, well, you know, let's give that a word so that boys don't feel gay. Let's call it experimentation. So, you know, society throws out these words that takes off the responsibility of accepting who you are. You can say, well, we only experimented when I was a teenager. And then when I'm married, I'm having thoughts about being with a man, but you know what? I'm really, that's bisexual, it's not gay. So society keeps throwing out all these things that really, I think for a man, are excuses that stops you from looking at who you are and what you feel. I hope I'm making sense.
Well, I believe you are, Steve. And Bonnie, you've had experience with this sort of thing for such a long time. Would you say that Steve's story is a typical story, or at least a story that you hear often regarding...
It's very typical that a man who's, you know, 18, 19, 20... And not every gay man can perform with a woman, but there is a certain segment or a certain percentage of gay men at that stage of their lives who are able to. And they're hoping against hope that if they love a woman enough, if they can have the family that, you know, it's a traditional family unit, or, you know, and all the family pressure that comes with it and society's pressure and religious pressure, as long as they can pull this off, they're really hoping the love of their wife will give them a straight life. But it's only a matter of time until those attractions start again, and the men just have to go out and start acting on them. And that's when honesty and the deceit start.
And Peter, I just want to add to that when you can blend in, and no one would ever know if I was in a group of people, you couldn't pick me up. So I'm in a room with guys that use the word fag in jokes and do the gay jokes about guys who you can tell they're gay. And as much as I would like to say, I don't. Sometimes I'm like, well, thank God they don't know about me, because I would be the target when I'm not around. So there's that. Now, as you get older, you start, you know, you stop really caring what people think. But I think when you're young, you really do.
I think that's a form of self-hatred, and that's why a lot of gay men make jokes about other gay men when they're passing themselves off as being straight. A lot of times,
exactly.
I get telling me, well, my husband's so homophobic, how can he be gay? So that's definitely one of the signs.
Interesting point, and I would have to agree with you, Bonnie. Steve, regarding this emotional component that you have indicated was missing in the marriage, this emotional connection, we often credit women with having the emotional connection is very, very important. How did your wife ever mention that there was a problem with your emotional connection, or how did that work? I'm fascinated to find out how the emotional interplay works in a situation like you were in.
My wife was 18, she was a virgin. And talking to a lot of the women that I've met through Bonnie's group, many were in the same situation. Because when you're trying to blend in and you haven't had experience with women before and you don't want to be judged, who are you going to wind up having your encounter with? Someone who's had many partners or someone who has none or limited partners? So a lot of these women that I've spoke to had very limited experience, and the gay man who was trying to blend in, that's his perfect wife, because she's not going to say, well, my last husband was pretty good at this, but you're only... So there's an acceptance. And I think at a younger age, you're just playing house. You know, you have the six-pack, and she's cute. My wife was a gymnast, and we're, you know, every chance we get, everywhere, on the roof, on the car, we're just having fun, physical fun. I don't remember, and I said I love you many times because I saw it in movies. That's what a guy says when he's with a woman, to make her happy, to make her do more, to have more fun. But I personally don't think that anyone really knows what that means until you get older. So an emotional connection for myself, it was all physical. It was playing house. And again, there's no absolutes, but a lot of the men that I talk to, they're honest, and we sit down and we have the same conversation. There's a similar dynamic if they tried to get married when they were younger. Now, if I was hiding and tried to marry a middle-aged woman, she would expect more emotional bonding, and I couldn't get away with the masquerade.
I see. Yes, that's very interesting. The experience levels of the two partners. Did it seem to you, in reading through the materials that I have for this show, did it seem to you that your wife was taking responsibility, that there was something wrong with her, and did you witness that?
And there were times when I even. Oh, I hate to say this because I feel so guilty, but there were even times when I put the guilt on her. Told her, you know, well, when she, at the end of the relationship, when I was having sex with a guy and having sex with her, and then over time the sex with her decreased. And when she would complain or she would try to wear sexy stuff, you know, I would say, well, I want a wife, not a prostitute, or, you know, I would belittle her or degrade her, or, like, can't you just be normal and have sex once in a while, and always make it seem like it was her fault. So
I see.
And I think that's very difficult, too, Peter.
Yeah. Well, I
that's
can see.
How you really take somebody's sexual esteem away and their self-esteem, and at least Steve is honest enough to admit it. Because a lot of our men are not honest at all.
Well, Steve, I do understand what you're saying. It sounds like a very difficult, very, very difficult situation. Obviously, you're in a situation where the truth seemed so so distant to what you're actually able to communicate to your wife, so that making her believe it was her fault, did that seem kinder? In other words, did you think it was kinder to her to make her feel that way than to tell her the truth? I'm trying to figure out what the risk factors are in your emotions and in your feelings toward her. How did that play out?
Okay. Peter, the lie wasn't just for her. The lie was for me, too. And the more I could say it, the more I would make myself believe that my lack of being able to be with her wasn't my fault. So it wasn't just me saying it for her. It was over and over and over, to where at the end, if I probably would have took a lie detector test, I would pass if he would have asked me whose fault was it, and I said hers. It was constantly trying to avoid labels that would hurt myself.
Bonnie, this is interesting to me, in as much as so often, and I have to say I'm guilty of this too, especially when one of we often see the Republicans falling down these days, without politicizing this too much. This isn't really a political discussion, but the latest that we see so much of in the media is where people are running around behind their wives. Oftentimes we, and I too, have thought to myself, well, that's just a person who absolutely knew that they were gay going into it, and the only reason that they got married was so that they could progress up the corporate ladder, or be able in other words, a purely selfish thing. But what I'm hearing Steve say is that it wasn't a purely selfish thing that was motivating him when he went into the marriage, that he honestly thought he could make it work. Am I understanding that right? You guys,
yes.
And Bonnie,
and
is that typical?
And I really do believe that's the case, Peter. I believe that most of the men, not 100%, but I would say at least 90% of gay men who marry their wives really love their wives to the best of their ability. And they really are hoping that this marriage will work. I mean, you know, they're not doing it because they want to trick them. They're not doing it because they're anti-woman, because they're gay. There's no ill intent there. They love these women. They're hoping they can make a marriage work. You know, they go into these marriages in good faith, really believing that loving someone enough will make those feelings go away. One of the other problems that we have, and I think it's really a really important issue to address, is that a lot of gay men cannot accept nor come to terms with themselves because they confuse being gay with the gay lifestyle. And I hear that so many times, that my husband won't fit into the gay lifestyle, that's why he believes that he's not gay. It's not like gay is a lifestyle. I mean, and that's where I think a lot of people get confused. Because if you're gay, that has nothing to do with a lifestyle. It's who you
are.
I
can confirm that. I can certainly confirm it.
Well, I think it depends on how old you are. I remember when I left my wife, I was young. And I think young people coming out to my own sexuality when I left her was almost like going through puberty again. And you hear this a lot with gay men. When they come out, they wind up going to gay bars and having multiple partners, and they use sex with other men just to reaffirm to themselves that they're attractive. And Peter, you probably are aware, this is, you know, before AIDS was big. It was a new guy every night was the practice in most gay bars in big cities. And especially for the younger crowd, sex was a way to say, I'm okay. If someone will have sex with me, it means I'm okay. You know, and I don't know if that's different from straight society and the way, you know, teenage boys and girls are. But in the gay society, that's part of it. And gay society isn't like there's not. I can't walk in a supermarket and assume everyone in there is gay. But in straight society, if a guy bumps into a woman in the supermarket, guess what? The assumption is that she's straight, and you can start up a conversation.
You're so right.
So what happens is gay people tend to go to bars, and now that there's computers, to websites. So the gay lifestyle is dictated by society saying, we don't want you here. You can be over here, and that's okay. So to be healthy emotionally or as people, we need to connect with each other. And I think when people say the gay lifestyle, they're talking more about where gay people go to connect. And I had a real negative feeling about that because I couldn't see myself going to gay bars. I thought gay bars were, you know, all the guys in there dressed up as women, wore stockings and heels, talked funny. And I was like, there's no way. And my first bar that a friend took me to after I left my wife was a leather bar. And I went in there about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was waiting for my friends. They were late. And the bartender, when around 4 o'clock came, he said, I think you should leave. It's going to start getting busy. And I said, why? And he said, because this is a gay bar. So that's what I deal with, that I don't fit in to the gay lifestyle because I just feel like, you know, there's no place for me. And I find that, you know, the computer is what it is. The gay bars are what they are. And it's a shame that there aren't other ways, that the lifestyle wasn't the same as straight people, where you could be walking down the street and meet someone outside of a store or in a supermarket or in a laundromat. You just don't have those same opportunities. So straight people don't need a lifestyle. They have the world.
I understand, Stephen. In fact, yes, that makes so much sense. And in fact, that's one of the goals of this particular radio show is to present the LGBT community as they really are versus the stereotypes. And I have to agree with you. For the heterosexual community, the world is sort of a safe place. In other words, if you begin flirting with a woman in the supermarket, you don't run the risk of being beaten up or shot. You know what I'm saying? Whereas the LGBT community is a little bit different. I need to tell you guys that we have a caller on the line. We have Sue from Colorado. And Sue, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hi, Sue.
Sue, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm listening.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Sue. I'm so glad that you have called the show. Bob, Extreme Echo. And if you can, Sue, I think you probably wanted to talk to Bonnie. Is that right? Bonnie's with us.
Right. Right. Hi.
And you can.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Sue.
Sue, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Go ahead. Did you call in and want to speak with Bonnie that you're both on? You can go ahead.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I just want to say that I am one of her participants in her support group online, and it has been just, I'm still with you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I can. Bonnie can hear you too. Go ahead.
Okay, and so she has a phenomenal support group that has been so instrumental to all of us women. That are confused with the revelation that our spouses, you know, have come out of the closet. And I think in light of this week, you know, with Dina Matos McGreevy's divorce, impending divorce from the former governor, you know, it's rekindled a lot of things. You're with her in the sensitivity of what she's going through, and it's very hard. If anything, it's re-angered me. And you know, Ronnie's been wonderful with it. And sometimes I just don't understand. I'm angry because I feel like innocently, we spouses have been used as a shield to cover this lifestyle, which I could probably condone, you know, from the onset. You know, most gays know that they're gay when they're young, and they seek out their own sexual preference. And you know what? I really honor that. What I don't honor is using innocent spouses, male or female, because it's coming about, and then, you know, having families and everything, and then a lot of times it's not till they get sloppy and they get caught that a lot of things just come to mind, like, how long has this been going on? And, of course, the Internet is the tool, as the other gentleman presented. He wasn't comfortable being in the gay bar scene, but having the wife and you know, the Internet is an instrumental tool to reach out. That is exactly how I found out with my ex. But it's been, you know, it's difficult on the adult children, and I have three boys coming to grips with this because this is their father, their role model, a man that they honor. And yet I've been pushed aside, and I feel a lot of resentment towards that because I am the victim. And, you know, and like McGreevy right now, he's pulling a lot of financial things because that's part of the negotiation of this divorce and whatever you can pull the dirt out with. And I had to leave New Jersey in order to come to Colorado here to start over. Because, and I feel I'm an all-around victim. I didn't do this. You know, I married in good faith and allegiance to a spouse, having had no idea of this. So any input, I would be welcome to it.
Well, I think that Sue brings up an issue that maybe Steve can address also, is that the marriage itself is such a hardship, and I am really understanding Peter. I feel that I try to understand why men go into these marriages. You can hear that I'm not sitting here condemning them. I'm trying to understand them. But once, you know, the news is out and once the marriage is over, a lot of these men, you know, have been torturing their wives. And I feel that, you know, I brought it up on your last show, that the wives go into these marriages unknowing, you know, about the whole situation. They devote their whole lives to these men. And they're devastated enough when the news comes out that their husbands are gay. But at that point, you know, I feel the gay husband should do everything humanly possible to try to at least make amends to the wife and the family by giving them the financial and emotional support that they deserve. But instead, they just seem to, you know, turn on them as if it's their wife's fault that the whole thing fell apart. And,
well, the thing
you know,
is, too, now they're exposed and they're more vulnerable. And then in my situation, the next set of threats came, you expose me, cost me my livelihood, you don't get any money. So, you know, it's a continued control scenario, and it's like, look, I married you for 28 years. I did my duty as a wife raising a family. You chose what you chose. For how long it was going on, I don't know. I only know from my discovery and everything. And it's like, at least have the decency to let me go, let me at least continue a lifestyle. Don't punish me and clean out all the funds, and now you're buying another house, and I'm here floundering around trying to restart a life again, and it's not easy. I'm 55 years of age, and to really start over, it's not about greener pastures. It's about my decision. Sure, I could have stayed and continued. He asked me to stay and continue the scenario, and I said no. Because, you know what, this is not an authentic marriage. I said, and I think for the next remainder lifetime, I'm entitled to have that, you know? So I chose to divorce and, you know, take whatever goes with it. But, you know, there should be something different there for me. You know, I put in the time, and I did what my marriage vows asked me to do with diligence. And I guess the angerness is with all the McGreevy stuff. It restirs all that. And it's like they walk away, and it's like they're still in their own denial. And it's still our fault even after the divorce. So help me explain this to me.
Well, Steve, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I know you're angry. I know you're hurt. I think your children and you both have to heal after 28 years of marriage, knowing that it was a lie. And it's going to take time. It's like when someone dies, no one can tell you how long you should grieve, and no one should tell you how long you should be angry. Your husband should show you the respect if he has, you know, if he's caught or he comes clean, and he decides. Or if you catch them, a lot of men will still deny it.
Yes,
they'll claim it with,
and I would,
you know,
not be surprised either, because it's been a known fact that a lot of them go on to the next heterosexual relationship to continue the hiding and everything. And it's a known fact, you know. it's just something they have to be comfortable doing, and a lot of them will never. The other threat to me is, don't tell my mother. And it's like, well, wait. You know, I see everybody else's mother standing behind with Fitzer and all those. I mean, it's, you know, these aren't great acknowledgments, but it happens, and it's like, I think it's family awareness of something that needs to come out. And they say, well, you know, you're divorced, move on. My feeling is, I can't move on until it's finished over here. It's like, if he came out and acknowledged it to his children, that would stop punishing me as being the one that, you know, filed for the divorce. But it's like, but why did I file for the divorce? There's a reason why. It wasn't just a falling out of love. It was discovery of something here that, to me, is not a marriage. I can't be a hypocrite to it, you know? It
so your
at least
children
validates
don't know?
For me.
So, Sue, do your children know about it?
Oh, yes, and the middle one found out. He saw it himself. But they're in that world of denial because, you know, it's a hard thing. That, you know, I'm not going to say male or female, sons or daughters. It's just something very hard to digest and, oh, not me. It's easy, but I'm the only one realistically that's dealt with this whole thing, and I'm the one being ostracized for what I feel will always be the right decision, you know?
And I think that's also very common, Peter. A lot of our women, when they, you know, end marriages, instead of the husband walking up to the plate and taking responsibility that the marriage ended because they're gay, you know, they want their wives to stay in the closet, you know, keep the secret for them, and then other people are sitting there blaming the wives for the marriage failing. How could you leave him? He's a great guy. And the children are blaming the mother, saying, why are you breaking up a family? And this is where dishonesty really, you know, comes into play very often, why women can't get past their anger, why women can't
move on with
their lives.
I see.
Husband,
well, this is a great revelation to me.
If he accepted it and came out and was honest, you know, I always wanted the round table, I called it, where he would sit there with the children, and whether he had to sit there and say, I left your mother because of another woman, I left... You know what I'm saying? I felt as a finale, as closure, to sit there as a family and say, I have done this. And I don't
have
to say...
Well, Sue, and Bonnie, this comes as a great shock to me. In fact, it's an aspect that I didn't realize existed, and it certainly sheds a lot of light on it. Now, my understanding, having talked to you, Bonnie, on the last show and this show, an assumption I made, which apparently is completely incorrect, is that after this is acknowledged between the two couples, the wife finds out, the husband finally deals with it, is that, you know, the man goes on to live some sort of a life where he finds a gay partner. But what I'm hearing from you, Sue, and I'm just shocked,
uh-huh.
You're telling me your husband moved on to find another wife after doing this to you?
No. I'm saying it's the fact that some to stay hidden, okay, will go on to another relationship with a woman.
We have a number of women in our group whose husbands have done that.
He did have a first wife and a child of that marriage. Then the Stina Matos came into the fold, and again, he remarries again for the political whatever and has another child by that product. So it is a fact that they, you know, to keep, you know, moving and hiding for maybe political gain, you know, they will move on into another relationship. I think I'd honor it. I probably could honor him better now, knowing that he's at, we know where he's at, and, you know, I just feel sorry. It's like, let her go already. Lead her with dignity also. Give her the divorce. You have a child. Do pay the piper. Pay what's right and financially do her. Let her move on in her life, too. You know, it's just, you know, it's so inappropriate.
Well, I completely agree. Bonnie, you say that this is...
By the way...
Why do you say this is fairly typical? I mean, I can understand the pressure.
It's not fairly typical. I would say about 20% of gay men who marry, who finally the marriage is over, will go out and marry again.
And I agree with that because I know several.
You do?
Right.
Well,
15%?
Yeah.
I'd say about 20%.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say about that. From my point of view in talking to them, it's more I think if you stay married long enough, that there's a problem with this group of people worrying about what their parents think. There's this connection that of mom, you know, I heard Sue about what his mother would think, or what, you know, my dad could never know. And for this group of men, usually the truth comes out when they're maybe between 40 and 55. Because I don't know why. I know the same thing happened with Bonnie talking about that time. And I don't know if there is a correlation, but for the guys that I know, and I know two guys, one is with his third girlfriend and one's with his second wife, and their concern is one is inheritance and one is religion in the family and what the family would perceive. But when they get to be a certain age, the family's not there anymore because his parents are going to die and his grandparents are going to die. And at some point, you can breathe deeply and say, okay, I don't have to worry about what they think anymore.
But one of the things I do want to bring up is that our women are always, so many of the women are protecting their husband's family. So many times women are telling me, well, we can't say anything because my ex-husband's mother is old. How is she going to take this news? You know, we're always protecting them, even after the marriage is over, and that's why it's so hard for us to move on, Peter. We don't have the closure.
I believe that the man talked her into believing that. I don't think that was something that she came up with. I think if I didn't want my wife to tell my mother that I was gay, I would tell my wife, you know, I'm just concerned that if she ever knows, she's going to die, and put the guilt on my wife and have her believe, well, if I tell her and she dies, it's my fault.
Right. So that's what a lot of these guys do. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why closure, when a guy can't be honest and let his wife go all the way around and make her keep his secret, he's out there living his gay life with, you know, other men, and she still has to keep it a secret from the children, from her friends, from her family.
Well,
and that's where
I can say I didn't. It was out there, and of course now with more and more between Senator Craig and everything, it is becoming a little bit more prevalent out there. It backs up the story. It's like, you know, I can't dream or come up with this. You know, it's a factual thing. And as Bonnie would tell you, we're probably about 40 million and growing each day. And, and it's just something. And it's only with more, you know, like I said, with Senator Craig and Governor McGreevy, that they're coming out, that there's a focus there, that there's like a celebrity, there's somebody here that is dealing with it now that we can relate to and say, okay, I can say I understand what the ex-wife is going through. And of course she's in the midst of the divorce, which at this point is at probably at its dirtiest, and with the mudslinging and everything, and it's like, just let it go, you know, get your settlement, let her get on with her life and raise your daughter and work that out. It's going to be negotiable. But it's like, why just keep tearing it down? I mean, you're never going to get back together.
Well, this is just mind-boggling to me. I often on this show we talk about how important equal rights for everyone is, and for people to stop this hate and prejudice against LGBT folks. Now, obviously, that is one of the reasons that men so desperately want to keep it a secret, is because of the hate factor, and I totally get that, but I'm having a hard time understanding.
There's no question about it, and I really hope with our future generations.
Me too.
You know, couples that are adopting, because to me it doesn't matter when you got love to give to a child. I don't care if you're green, you know, and I really do hope with the next generations for smartening up and everything, that things are becoming more acceptable, that this doesn't have to go on. Live your life. Live it with whoever you want. Live with an alien, you know? It's like, you know, do this, because it is about who you are and being happy in the skin you are. And you know, that's all I'm saying. It's not this, I just want to make it clear. I'm not gay bashing. I'm not.
I don't hear that from you at all, Sue. I don't hear it at all.
Neither do I.
dealt, I honored a man 28 years. Yes, I long suspected a lot of things, and it isn't until they grew up that all of a sudden the back pages begin formulating sentences that are making sense to you. And as I said to Bonnie, for me, yes, it validates many years of poor bedroom behavior towards me. I said,
so, this is Steve. Can I ask you a question?
Man, I can hope for something better. And it's okay, but I just wish he would be more honest with my three adult sons so they can move rather than continue hiding in it with him. And as far as the mothers or whatever, I'll be honest with you. My kids had trouble in their life, and I wasn't spared anything. You know, as I used to say, we're all in this together. We will deal with it. Because you can't make it go away unless you talk about it. And then it begins, you know,
healing.
So Steve would like to ask you a question.
Sure.
Go ahead, Steve.
Was there ever a point after you found out where you said to yourself, either out loud or to yourself in your mind, why me? Did I do something to pick this type of guy?
No.
And I'm only asking this because I've heard this from other women.
Really? That was my fault?
Did you ever blame yourself for anything? Maybe picking the wrong guy, having the wrong, you know, that maybe this is the, you know, is this the type of guy that I'm attracted to?
No, because you want to know something? Going back 28 years, most of us married at a high school at 21. Okay, and good old Catholic girls, we didn't know from this stuff. It wasn't anything my mother sat the night before I got married to discuss with me. Because it wasn't out there. You know, as time progresses and more things egress, you know, with the movement of everything, you know, we're all getting educated, whether the internet or whatever, we're all getting educated with this new generation of everything and acceptance. And I have a lot of friends whose children are coming forth and expressing non-lesbian, and that's fine. You know, it's like, it doesn't mean I love you less. And I love you.
Thank you, Sue. Now, Steve, did you have an addition, something else you wanted to say, Steve?
Yes. I want to ask Sue if her husband, when you were younger.
I began suspecting because, you know, I'm a tall blonde. I'm nothing not to look at. And you got to wonder why the rejection in the bed. And I will say this. His biggest habit was he would run out of bed and wash me off of him. And that's like, this is not normal in a marriage. This is not love, you know, with lovemaking. Why are you running out so fast to wash me off you? You know, I had my cologne on, and I think maybe it's the brand or it's my deodorant. I don't know. But, I mean, over the years, you're looking at this type of behavior, and you've got to question yourself, you know, why are you rejecting me?
Well, Sue, I have to say to you that I find it inexcusable on a husband's part to first leave and break this news and then insist that you keep it a secret. It seems to me the responsibility of he is completely still. I'm just floored that anyone could leave the wife and then want them to keep it a secret. I'm just shocked.
That
happens very often, though, Peter. We have so many women, once again, who can never have closure because they're not allowed to.
Oh, my.
They come out of the closet, but, you know, the wives are stuck back in the closet further than ever. So,
her husband did not come clean. He was caught. So he had no intentions of being honest with her. Why would he be honest with the rest of the world?
You know, Bonnie puts out these wonderful newsletters that are so informative, and a lot of them are intakes from the show and everything. And, you know, I did try to have a good conversation with him and said, you know, there is help out there. Go for help. This is long overdue. You need to mirror yourself. You need to gain acceptance. And that's fine. I could appreciate that and honor you doing that, doing something about it. And I gave him the article and everything else, and he said, yes, I'm finally going to go for help. And it's like, well, it's a start, and I respect that. It's a start. for you.
Well, Annie, I'm sorry, I have to thank you, Suze. It's been a wonderful call, and the only reason I need to move along is because the callers are stacking up. We have so many people that are wanting to talk to. Yes, it is. Thank you so much.
Easter and Passover, and hope to be on again.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. God bless. And that was caller Sue. And now we have Annie from New York State. Annie, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thank you. Welcome. Hi, Bonnie. It's Annie.
Hi, Annie.
Hi, Annie.
Nice to hear your voice.
Hi. How are you? Well,
welcome.
Let's see. I'm going to just say that I was married for 27 years. And, let's see, how do I put this? I was pushed away from my husband. He had a secret which I knew absolutely nothing about, and I thought he was pushing me away because there was another woman. So I went through the normal depression that I was losing my marriage. Finally, when he left, and it was about 2 years later that I actually found out why he left was because he was with another man. The depression I went through was nothing like I experienced before. And it just makes your whole life a complete lie, and it's all built on deceit.
Well,
you know, when you look at these long-term marriages, Peter, these are not women who had just a few years invested. These are women who really, you know, gave their whole adult livelihood. You know, you get married at 25, and 30 years later, you know, you're 55. You know, those are, you know, that wonderful years of your life that you can never regroup and you can never get back. And for men who can never even be honest about it, and to me that's really unconscionable, that these men continue to keep leading these lives. And that's why I felt like the gay community, you know, it really is a dark mark on the gay community when you have men like this who are sociopathic liars. And, you know, this is, you know, McGreevy or people like the Craigs who represent homosexuality, which is not what homosexuality is about. It really, like I said, there's so many wonderful, honest gay people who now are, you know, once again, have a bad stigma against them because of men who are dishonest, and this is the reputation, you know, that gets out. And I think it's really important to, you know, make that clear that these men do not represent the gay community. These men are just
liars. Thank you, Bonnie. Now, I should ask, was there something else you wanted to ask Bonnie about or talk to Bonnie about, Annie?
No, that's all. That was just, you know, my impression. I know you have a lot of other people online, and I just wanted to have my say. That's all. It's
thank
all
you.
Based on deceit.
And I would like to say that,
Bonnie, thank you.
Thank you, Annie. And Annie was a contributor. We have a book out, Peter, called How I Made My Husband Gay. About straight wives. And that's my new compilation book, where we have 35 women who tell their stories about how, you know, the husbands were blaming them for being gay. And Annie was one of the contributors to the book, so I thank you very much, Annie, for letting others
know
and men know.
Thank you. I'm holding in my hand a copy of Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, but I haven't seen the newest. By the way, there's a link to Bonnie's newest book over at strictlyconfidentialradio.com in the calendar date if you'd like to find out more about Bonnie's new book. Thank you so much for your call, Annie.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Take care, Bonnie. I'll talk to you soon.
All right,
bye.
Annie. Take care. Nice to hear you.
Good evening. Thank you. And next we welcome Dolly from Washington State. Dolly, are you still with us?
Good morning.
Hi, Dolly. Hello, Dolly.
Hi, all.
Hi, Dolly. Welcome to the show. You're on with all three of us.
Okay, thank you. I really don't know where to start. It just seems strange how the women affected in this we're all 55, give or take a few years. We've all been married 28 years, give or take a few years. Why does it take them so long to be honest? And then, or maybe not even honest, it's like mine never was honest. I mean, I just found him out, you know, through being a spy, really. And even when I talked to him about trying to be honest, and he just never opened his mouth about it at all. Matter of fact, when he asked me for the divorce, he said, "I don't love you, and I never have." So after investing so many years, it's like, I just was flabbergasted, like, why? I just didn't understand what in the world. And why he couldn't be honest, even to this point, is just still traumatic for me.
That's so heartfelt. That's such a terrible thing to go through, and I never have. That's really rubbing salt in the wound, isn't it?
I know, and that's why I say at least if the men could take responsibility, Peter, and say, you know what, I was hoping this would work. I loved you when I married you. I was hoping these feelings would go away. But unfortunately, they don't, and I can't let you suffer any longer. You know, it's not fair to you. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to the children. I think that if, you know, men could do this, and there are some men who do it, you know, and things work out. People can remain friends. They can co-parent together. But with these guys, you know, like I say, there's a certain percentage of them that will never be honest, that do things the wrong way, that make the wives continue to suffer. It's not bad enough they lose their marriage. I mean, now they have to lose their property, their home, have divisiveness with the children. It's, to me, really a horrible thing that, you know, men have to step up to the plate and be responsible for what they've done.
Well, I completely agree. I completely agree. I'm wondering, Dolly, did your husband expect you to keep it a secret also?
When I finally found out, I was livid. And I just told him, I'm going to blow you away. I'm going to tell everybody you know. And I actually didn't. But I did find out later that that's when he came out to his family. Mostly because I think that... his name is Steve, by the way. And I think that he just decided that it was just his time to come out anyway. I had to think, like, what is wrong? Am I doing something wrong? Why is he so disconnected? Why doesn't he want to spend time with me? Why doesn't he want to spend time with our children? We would go to Hawaii on vacation, and he would leave me and our two children off at one beach, and he would go to a nude beach for 4 hours and come back and pick us up at dark. He just did this stuff and think nothing of it. No explanation. No, I'm sorry. No, he just expected that that should be okay.
Well, we appreciate your call. It's wonderful to hear from you and to hear from people who have gone through this, because so many of us have not a clue in the world, and it's very brave of you to bring this to us. And thank you for calling.
And Peter, while we're on the subject, when Dolly's on the phone, like you said, so many of you don't have a clue. But I'm hoping that when your listeners are listening in, and when they go to a bar and they see married men in there, that they're going to really think twice before getting involved. When they see the hurt of the women who are calling in today and how it's devastated their lives, and guys, you know, have to really think when they're going with a married man, that these married men have wives who are sitting home and who are suffering, wondering where their husbands are, and that they really should not get involved with them.
I completely agree, Bonnie.
I just want to add that a big part of this is the infidelity. And yeah, it's a gay relationship, and he's married to a woman. But cheating is cheating. And I think what Bonnie's saying is, you know, if I go to a bar and I see a married guy in there who I know is married, by me not saying or talking to him or trying to have sex with him, it's not going to make him straighter. it's not going to make him less gay. But I think there's the infidelity that you know, until it's just it would be the same that if a woman came over and knew he was married and decided to hurt his wife by having an affair. There's two different questions there, you know. And the one thing I just wanted to say that, and to remember, because you're not going to get all your callers on, to remember there are millions of men in these relationships, and you're hearing from the wives, and I understand why you're not going to hear from most men, but to understand the depth of this is not a handful of relationships across the United States. That,
you know, well, thank you.
This is a handful in your neighborhood, not across the country, that there are millions of men in the same situation doing the same thing because they're trying to pass.
Well, thank you. That's a good comment. And I must say, Bonnie and Steve, you have lit up the phone lines like Christmas trees, and so we're going to need to move on. Thank you so much. That was a wonderful call.
Okay, thank you.
Bye, Dolly.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Bye, Dolly. Thank you.
Dolly's and stories in the new book, too, Peter, on how I made my husband gay. She's a contributor.
Well, let's move on to a caller also from Washington State. We have Carol. Carol, are you still with us? Okay, we've lost Carol. Let's move along to Anna from Orlando. Anna, are you still with us?
I am on. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Great.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I kind of wanted to call in because I also am a member of Bonnie's chat support group on Thursdays and on Sundays, as I haven't been on for a little while with computer glitches, as Bonnie does know. But I want to kind of to put a little different side to Sue's conversation that you had just had with her. I was married for 17 years to my husband. I have three daughters at that time. Found out that he was being a man. And what I wanted to add to it was that there can be a positive ending, and I am a living proof of that, and so are my children. My ex-husband and I have worked very hard to co-parent the girls. I have three daughters. I have worked very hard to be forgiving and loving and accepting his lifestyle. And like Sue, I was very hurt, and it took some time to get to the point that I am now, which has been 9 years. So I want to say to women out there who are just finding out that they just need to feel the emotion and feel the anger and feel, and what they're feeling is very valid. I have been a little bit more lucky. I did not have a bitter husband at the time, so we were able to communicate, and that's really important.
And I think a lot of times when you have a husband who's responsible, it makes a whole difference. Because I've seen women who have had successful ex-marriages. The husband is there for them. He's there for the children. It's not going to be a breeze just accepting gay, because that's something that we have to all absorb. I think a lot of times men are very insensitive to the fact that they've had a whole lifetime to adjust to who they are. But then they tell us, and they expect us right away to accept, okay, my husband's gay. It's not that simple.
No,
you know, we have to first go through the shock, absorb it ourselves. A lot of our illusions, a lot of our feelings. It's a whole big process, Peter, and, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. But if a man is supportive and a man is there to help his wife, Anna's an example of how there can be successful ex-marriages and co-parenting for the children, and that should be the primary concern.
Exactly.
Making sure that the children have, you know, two parents that love them and that can work together in raising them.
Right. If they get mixed up in the whole turmoil of, you know, these children are dealing with divorce and they're also dealing with a gay parent, which is a lot to handle, especially if the children are a little bit more young. You know, if the children are younger, I would say my girls were 12 and younger. That was a little bit, it's a lot to take, but... you know, and again, it wasn't easy, but if you make them secure in the fact that we do love them, it can work out.
And also, I say it's really important because what I think a lot of parents, and I tell women what they have to realize is, and I had this conversation with three women just in the last 2 days, even though you're angry and even though you have a lot to be upset about, and I don't negate any of that for a moment, really important not to be bad-mouthing the father in front of the children. And I always tell women, come to our support group and vent your feelings. Don't do it with the children, because the only ones who really get hurt are the children. You know, children are made up from both parents, and when you're sitting and you're attacking that other parent, you're attacking part of that child. Mm-hmm. But the other issue is also that I think a lot of women have to face the reality that they have a chance that their child might be gay.
Yes.
You know, there's twice the chance of having a gay child when you have a gay parent than when you have two straight parents. But, I mean, that statistically, studies have been done to show that. And in the event that you have a child who is gay, you don't want that child growing up with all these negative gay messages because you're angry at your ex-husband. So it was very important for me, after the news came out to my children that their father was gay, to try to reinforce it with some real positive role modeling of gay role, you know, gay positive role models, just in case that was the case. And as it turned out, you know, my daughter was a lesbian. She's passed away since that, you know, in the last 5 years. But at least she never had a hard time accepting who she was, because I was able to accept it.
Exactly.
These are a lot of issues, Peter, that we have to go through that I don't think other women realize.
Exactly. I want to.
Well, I certainly didn't realize.
I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I certainly didn't realize that there's more here than I ever even possibly dreamed of.
Yeah, go ahead, Ann. You were going to say.
Is Steve still there?
Yes, I am, Ann. Hi.
Steve, I just want to say something to you, and I kind of want to, and I know there's other people waiting to talk, and I want to get other people on, but I want to say that when you talked about your wife, I can still feel that you still hurt about what happened, and I picked that up when I was listening. I just want to, can I say that's true?
Yeah, I still feel guilty as I come
right.
to terms with my behavior. I don't have the luxury that you have. We were young. Our communication skills were basically in the bedroom. When this came out, we couldn't talk to each other. We became separated, and her and my children did not speak to me. I wish it was different.
I feel for that, because my ex-husband, his family disowned him, and because of him being gay, which is quite sad. And I just, I can't understand that. And I can't understand what, you know, is going on there. But I just want to say
this is why men aren't honest.
Pardon me?
This is the fear and why men are not honest. I think your husband knew in his heart that you loved him enough that if he was truthful with you, that eventually you would be able to talk. And it took 9 years. I think it's like grieving. I don't think you can say you should be over it. It's been 5 years, or you should be over it. It's been 2 years. I think every person grieves differently. And I
believe that.
And when this happens, I think you have to grieve for the marriage that you thought you had.
I know, but you know what? There's got to be a point where the woman, if they're if with the gay husband, there's got to be a point where you have to pick it up and you have to move on, because there's such a life to live. I mean, if you're going to sit back and you're just going to grieve for years and years and years, you're missing out. I'm not saying...
I agree, but I don't think there's a... if I had a loved one pass, I don't think I would like someone tell me, you know, you should be over it. Depending on how we were raised and our strengths and weaknesses, we get over things and rebound differently, and I don't think... You know, I think this situation for women is the same. I don't think there's a book that someone wrote, and I know Bonnie wrote many great books. I've read a couple, and there's nothing in there that says after a certain period of time you should get on with your life. You know, I think it depends on your family, your support group, and the strength that you have as a person. And I think for each person, it's different.
It is different. I agree. Bonnie, what do you think about that?
I think it depends on every situation, and I think you have to look at how long a person was married, you know, I got off very easy because I left my marriage, you know, early in the marriage. When I look at other women who have spent years and years there, you know, and who have given up the best years of their life, and they're spending years with men who are peeling them away or who are emotionally abusive, you know, physically neglectful, sexually neglectful, or blaming them for their sexual problems, the more time you have to be battered down, the longer it takes to recover. So if you're a decent guy and you're just caught up in a bad situation, and there are some wonderful, you know, gay men who I know who are ex-husbands, and I send my guys who come to me who are looking for support to them. I mean, they're wonderful men who just got stuck in a bad situation, then it's easier for the woman to recover. But I always tell women, the longer you take to recover, you know, it's one thing to be angry, but you have to be able to express that anger, and you have to move on, because if you don't, you become bitter. And when you become bitter, you're only hurting yourself. You're not hurting anybody else but you. So there's a lot of different...
And then your children.
And your children also. And I think that it's so important to try to at least get some emotional well balance out of this, you know, very disconcerting situation. There's no easy fixes. There's no click your heels and it's going to be over. There's no magical solution, but there has to be a lot of working at this. Otherwise, it just doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Carol. It's been a very interesting call, and Anna from Orlando, and I believe that's who we have here, right? And
yeah, thank you for calling,
Anne. Thank you.
You're welcome, and Bonnie, I will see you online tomorrow night.
That sounds good, Peter.
Thank
so
you.
Nice to hear. It's nice to meet hear the voices of the women who I only see on the computer.
Well, yes, the voice.
Exactly, to hear their voices. Yes.
It adds a whole new dimension, and in fact, Von, there's so many folks calling up that I lose track of their names by the time. And next, let's move on to Carol from New York. Carol, are you still with us?
I am. Hi, Bonnie and Steve. How are you?
Hi, Carol. Hi. How are you?
I'm good. I couldn't resist calling in because I think that there's not that many people out there who have a story like mine, and not that I'm going to give you the whole story as you know it, but I think this is more of a negative outlook toward these men, where some of them say, oh, yes, I would love you. I've loved you as much as I could ever love a woman. After 27 years and 3 kids, it turned out that mine was a pathological liar, leading a double life, and gay. And the problem with the children isn't so much that he was gay, because we're the most liberal people on earth, being New Yorkers especially, but the fact that he continues to be out. He continues to lie. He continues to say that I am crazy and he's not gay, and why did I ruin his life? And he basically got the trifecta. He married a cover, a meal ticket, and a breeder. It's what, like, you know, some of these guys, it's their dream in life to get all this taken care of for them. And on the way out, they decide, you know what, you're my past, and I'm moving toward my future, and I want everything. The heck with you and the kids. You don't need anything. It's not important what your needs are going forward. I want everything. And that's when the divorces get messy, and that's when people start to get even more angry. And that's when it takes a long time to get, well, not really over it, but to deal with it and to have a new normal and not to be bitter and to be a little bit less angry. And this is all, as you know, 10 years ago in my life, and I'm still angry. I just, you know, would love to hear, yes, I never meant to hurt anybody. I'm sorry. You were right. I mean, you know, it just isn't fair to a lot of us who marry some of these men and get nothing, not even the validation of them saying, yes, you're right, I'm gay.
Exactly, and I think that makes a major difference. I know that with my ex-husband, it took him, I think, at least 15 years after the marriage for him to finally say he was sorry and understand what I'm sorry meant, not just to pay lip service to it, and I think that's when my healing came in, because when he could finally say he was sorry and really mean it and understand what he had done to my life, and it took him many years to finally get to that point, but he finally one day came to that realization, you know what? I screwed things up. And
yeah,
it's not just the marriage that's screwed up. It's all the aftermath years when you're raising children and all the issues you have to deal with and being a single parent. I mean, there's a lot of different issues that come up. But I think, Carol, that you're so right that if these guys would say, I'm sorry, and really mean it, that it would make a major difference. But a lot of them aren't really sorry. And I think a lot of the people are also, I think a lot of them, you know, are very, there's a percentage of these guys who become extremely sociopathic. Maybe it's from living a lie every day and starting to believe your lies. They're narcissistic. They're really all about them, as we say. They put their needs first. And once again, this is not a reflection on gay people.
No, just the ones who marry us.
But gay husbands, the ones who are living this lie.
And then on the way out, try to take everything.
Exactly. And these are the guys who every day look in the mirror and they're not who they are. I mean, they just have to keep up with every lie that they're doing. And I think that lying becomes pretty much like inherent in their personalities and natures.
I just want to add one thing, because when I was married and I was living a double life at the end, there was this sense of I was having my cake and eating it too and getting away with it. And there was this, you know, I'm smarter than everybody else and I'm not going to get caught. And I wonder if you feel like, and Carol, you're still there, I hope,
maybe
your husband was thinking some of that.
Degree, and you feel stupid, like you've been really taken advantage of. And you didn't see it coming. I mean, like Dana McGreevy, you absolutely did not see this coming.
Well, Carol, that's a very interesting call. We appreciate it, and you've certainly brought a lot to the program. Thank you so much for calling, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay, bye-bye, Donna.
Thank you, Carol. And that was Carol from New York, and now we move to Carol from Rhode Island. Carol from Rhode Island, welcome to Strictly Confidential. We've missed the call. Though I have a couple of things to bring up here. These callers have brought such interesting aspects to this show. I'm very grateful to them. Regarding children, Steve, you mentioned that you had, I think, a couple of kids, and there was some talk earlier regarding that if the kids are gay, they get a bad impression. Do you think any of your kids are going to be gay, or are they gay, and have you talked with them about it?
I don't have communication. I have spoken to my ex-wife, and the kids were happy. She told me that, I was concerned, my male ego, of course, did they call anyone else daddy, because that's still a part of me as a man. As a gay man, I'm still a man. And she told me that, I asked if she had told them. And she told me that, no, she hasn't, but if I want her to relay any messages or contact them, that she will tell them that I'm gay. And, again, it's almost like being gay is this thing that's held over you, that you're threatened with it. And I understand and I take responsibility, and I believe that's why a lot of people, or a lot of men, are afraid of being honest, because the word gay is used as a weapon so much in society that even after your wife knows, with her anger, and I even heard a previous caller mention, the first thing I did was tell him I'm going to tell everybody he's gay. So the word gay becomes a weapon, and people who are angry at each other for whatever the reason, these things happen. But, as long as that word has that meaning, men will, if they can, and they can blend in, they're not going to be honest. And it's a shame, because there is no marriage. It's not a marriage. It can't be a marriage. The guy's gay. She's straight. You manage to have children. You don't know what a marriage is. You're just living together. And that's the shame.
Steve, let me ask you about the children. There's something that comes to mind regarding that you don't see them. It's my understanding that that's illegal. How is she preventing you? I mean, you have parental rights to see your children regardless. Do you not? Is there something I'm missing here?
I think there's shame. Early on there was shame. How do I face my kids and tell them that I left their mother because I was gay? She told me that she didn't tell them. Now that they're adults, and we don't live in the same state, I don't know where they are. I spoke to her, and this is what I was told. And I still today, 30 years later, there's this fear in my stomach of confronting my children. and having to explain what happened with my marriage and not knowing what was said behind, you know, closed doors. And, you know, my wife, you know, even if she tells me that she didn't say anything, I find that hard to believe because kids are going to be curious. And, you know, where was my father? There's all these different things to play into it that there's a part of me that says, well, if they're happy, they're happy. And I'm not going to interfere with that. And I wish things were different, but I think that comes with being honest. I think, you know, men in this situation have to understand that when you're honest, you're going to take the chance of losing something. You might lose your parents, as one caller said, and the parents won't speak to you. It doesn't happen all the time. I think it depends on your relationship. Your children might not speak to you. Your wife might not speak to you. But it's not a marriage. And, you know, Bonnie will agree with me here. Even though you're married, it's not a marriage. You're just living together in a lie. There is no happiness. It's all fake. And at some point, and you might not know it early on, at some point, when you realize it's a fake and you have to reach outside the marriage to be with another man, that's when you know it's fake. When you have to reach outside that marriage, why not be responsible and just tell the truth?
I understand, Steve. My heart breaks for you, Steve. My heart breaks for you, Steve, and it breaks for the callers that we've heard from this evening. What a horrible confluence of broken hearts and lies and all of the things that there's such pain in your voice, Steve, and also from the callers. Bonnie, this is pretty rough stuff.
Well, it is, and I do want to say that people in Steve's situation are more the exception than the rule, but they're certainly out there. I always encourage women, once again, that once they get past the initial shock, that they need to realize that it's important to have two parents co-parenting their children. There are very few women who really just don't want to have any dealings at all with their ex-husbands. But the majority of women, the overwhelming majority, is the opposite. They really want their husbands being involved in helping them with raising the children, but the husbands are not bothering. You know, they're busy with their new lifestyle.
That's true.
And like Steve says, they're like kids in a candy shop now going through adolescence. You can talk about that, Steve.
Whenever you decide to experiment with your true sexuality, it's the same as when a straight man or a straight boy goes through puberty. You're experimenting. You're like, wow, it's like Christmas morning. And, you know, for a gay man who's in a marriage, and I understand the pain of the women who have called tonight, I also understand why the man, when he, if he voluntarily says I'm gay, not he's caught, but if he admits to it, there is this weight that comes off your shoulders that you've been carrying and lying all this time that you just feel like crying. And it's almost like you hit the emotional lottery. And yes, it's selfish because you're, you know, it's like one day you had cancer and the doctor said you're going to die. The next day he said, oops, not you, I made a mistake. It's this emotional, like, wow, that, you know, I said it. I finally told her the truth. And I think the anger, I think right away when the honesty happens between the husband and wife, that she's going to be angry, she's going to be frustrated, she's going to think, why me? What, you know, how can this happen to me? She's going to think all these things, and she has to process it. At the same time, he's thinking, oh, my God, I just wasted my whole life. I finally, you know, it's over. And I think both of them need time before they can come together as intelligent people, thinking about their children, thinking about the time they spent together as friends, and, you know, and sit down and say, you know, let's talk about this as grown-ups, and I'm sorry if I hurt you, and let's move together for the children. Yes, that happens a lot, but I think both of the people, for different reasons, have to get over what they're feeling before they can come together.
Well said, Steve.
But in the meantime, while they're trying to get over it, These guys are out there, and the women are the ones being the caretakers to the children, having to raise them, having to support them, and the men aren't around.
That's true. Yeah, they're going to experiment with their new life, and they're going to be very selfish, and the woman's stuck with the child, and sometimes the mortgage, sometimes, you know, she, you know, she's not making the type of money, and the bills are piling up, and, you know, he's now experimenting with his new life, and becomes very selfish at that time, and now she really feels neglected. Like, I gave you my whole life, you tell me that you're gay, and you're walking away with your boyfriend. So I think for the guys, there has to be a sense of responsibility from the very beginning. When you are honest, you still have to be responsible.
Well said, guys. Now I need to welcome another caller. We have Viv. Viv is calling from Ohio. Viv, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Let me turn off my volume here so I can focus. I think there's a delay between the computer and the telephone line.
Okie doke. Yeah, we have to kill the computer line, or it will interfere with your conversation.
Oh, I have to kill the computer line?
You'll need to turn the sound down on the computer, and you'll be fine.
Right, that's what I'm trying to do. Okay.
Okay, welcome. Welcome to the show, Viv. You're on with myself and Bonnie and Steve.
Hi, Viv.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Viv.
I am, just for a little history, I'm 48 years old. I was married 25 years. When I first started dealing with my husband being gay, which he still won't admit, I used to ask myself, how could I be so stupid? But now I've kind of turned my self-talk around to, I just say, bless my little heart. I don't know how I could have been so naive for so many years. We have two kids, and I appreciate what Steve said, that you don't have a marriage that you just it's just two people living together, because that is very true. And there's been a lot of talk about the mothers not specifically, you know, speaking of gay men, about the mothers not bashing the father. But it's turned out that my ex-husband, he just hates me. And he says very mean things and does very mean things to retaliate against me. We can't even have an intelligent conversation in reference to the children. So I'm basically a single parent. And I'm... Our house has been for sale for 2 years. I feel like I'm completely stuck in limbo. And I feel very emotionally anorexic.
Well, first of all, this husband was very emotionally abusive to her throughout the marriage. And even now in the after marriage, I mean, can I tell him what he does with your children, Viv?
Sure.
You know, he's very... You know, he likes to play the good parent, so he's involved with having the kids come over there, and he's smoking pot with the kids and with their friends to make him look like he's the good guy and Vivian's the bad, you know, the mean parent.
Oh, my stars. Yes.
And that has nothing to do with being gay. That's just being an irresponsible parent.
Yeah.
If grown-up men want to smoke dope, they should do it with grown-up men, not with little kids.
Well said.
And, you know, so it's very frustrating for her not only have to contend with the aftermath of the 25-year, you know, marriage that was very emotionally abusive to her. And, Viv, can you talk a little bit about how your husband was emotionally abusive to you, especially, like, sexually?
He always said sex was dirty, but he was taught that it was dirty. And he would say, how could you think of a thing like that at a time like this? I'm like, at a time like what? Well, the kids are in the house. I would clean the house, have all the laundry done, have all hot meal on the table, all the dishes cleaned up from preparation. And he would come in and say, but the ceiling fan has dust on it. And, you know, a healthy monogamous relationship should have sex on average about 7 or 8 times a month. And
huh?
We were active about 4 to 6 times a year.
And for a lot of couples, that's, you know, I wouldn't say average, it's even above average. A lot of these men don't want to have any kind of sexual relationships with their wives after the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And they always and make you feel like, you know, they're doing you
it's a favor.
It's your
fault.
Hmm? Or that, you know.
As a man, I'm going to tell you, we make you feel like it's your fault that, you know,
exactly.
I'm not attracted because you put on 5 pounds. I'm not attracted to you because, you know, the house is dirty. All you want
right.
to do is have sex and make you feel like, well, if I would have cleaned the house, you would have had sex with me.
But the house wasn't dirty. I was a stay-home mom, and I'm a perfectionist, and I had it as close to perfect as you could get it, and he still would find criticism.
He just wanted to make it your fault that he could not perform. And usually when he can't perform is when he's getting his needs met somewhere else.
Oh, he was definitely getting his needs met. He was definitely getting his
things met. And you know, I just want to say this because it's not really brought up in the situation here, but I, you know, in the Dear Steve columns, when I have a woman from Bonnie's group write me, a lot of times they'll give me stories about, well, I caught my husband using a toy and women's underwear, and he said he's not gay. And I'm thinking to myself, well, okay. It's like, unless you're hit with the truth from God's mouth to your ears, it's very hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's, you know, if you're confronted with the evidence, but when you see things that any normal person would say, okay, you know, a plastic penis is a penis, that these even computer, you know, gay websites. I see my husband on a gay. At some point, you have to say, my husband's gay. That this isn't a pop-up. This is something that's going on.
See,
and
when a man is 40 years old, Steve, and he's looking at gay websites, can you please address that?
He's gay.
Right.
I mean,
it's not gay curious at that stage,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I would think God.
Listen, if I look at a McDonald's commercial because the flash is on in the Super Bowl, that's one thing. But if I sit in front of the TV all day and I TiVo McDonald's commercials, I guarantee you when I'm hungry, I'm going to the Golden Arch.
Mm-hmm.
So there's such a thing as curiosity. It's the norm. Curiosity, I was curious about sushi. I tried it. I know in 2 seconds, I don't like sushi. I'm never ordering sushi again.
Well said, Steve. Viv, let me ask you a question. I haven't brought this topic up yet, but I'd like to ask you, were you and your husband involved in a church? And if so, was it one of the fundamentalist churches that beats up on gay people every Sunday, or at least in the materials? What was your life like along those lines? Viv, were you involved in a church?
Yeah, we were. We were very active in church. Very active in church.
And what kind... Tell us about that, please. Go ahead.
Well, just that, you know, it was, I don't know, specific. It was a Baptist church. And so it was very conservative. And they would have these marriage conferences, and he was always real awkward and real uncomfortable when we would sit through some kind of a marriage, you know, marriage talk, marriage bonding, marriage, whatever.
I see.
Did they ever come up in the church, Viv?
Some, but alcohol was a bigger issue. You know, with the Baptist church, alcohol was more of a bigger issue.
I just want to ask you.
I talked to my pastor when I was convinced that my discovery was right.
I see.
And he told me that it was very much like being like, you know, you marry till death do us part. That it's like being married and then you find out your husband is your spouse is terminally ill. You kind of take what you get.
I see. So there was no input from his point of view as to the honesty of your husband, that your husband should have been honest. It was all that you should just take what you get. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mm-hmm. And that we should just pray about it, and that there's a special kind of therapy that could help him get through this and get past it.
Yeah, the ex-gay movement. Yeah, that works. Sorry. Didn't
and there's a lot of that that goes on with our women. And I would also say that I hate to put any of our women on the spot, but it's about every woman that's called in tonight that I know from my support group, Peter. All of
yes.
them came from good, you know, just about all except for Carol. But, you know, a lot of them came from good Christian families, good Christian mm-hmm. upbringings. They were virgins when they got married, right, Viv?
Yep, exactly.
They had no previous sexual experience. You know, they were the prototype of a woman that a gay man would feel more comfortable with. Exactly. You know, I tell women that there's, you know, that prototype that a gay man is going to look for. And that's why I tell
women. We don't want a woman who has sexual experience with other men. We do not want to be judged and condemned. We want to blend in.
Exactly.
And you know.
Well, Steve, what was it like?
One thing.
Yes.
I just want to add one thing that, you know, in a lot of these relationships of the men I know who are